This is The Vocal Minority.
Hello, everyone. My name is Morgan Freeman. It's my great pleasure to introduce you to the two best guys in the podcast game. Welcome to The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Come on this journey with the boys and make sure to follow, comment, download, and like. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to go grab a couple of cold pops and remind Andy Dufresne that the world's best podcast, The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve, is just about to start. Good day.
The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
Welcome to the program. Get ready, get set, and go.
Back yet again. You can lock us in a hole like Andy Dufresne, but we will find a way out. I think we've proven that repeatedly.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Like, we're not to toot our own horns or anything, but we are fairly resilient, right?
Multiple large companies have tried to stop the show. It's just not working. Right. So here we go. And yeah, we got a website, thevocalminority.net. That's our actual website, unlike the one Nick has been looking at for the last 2 years, apparently.
So funny, man. Seven people have viewed your website. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
I just love that you never realize we promote thevocalminority.net and you're going to, I don't even know what it was, some other website. Like when we first started the show, we registered two websites and then we just had a little failure and one got launched. I don't know, but you've been looking at the wrong website for a couple of years now.
I got a lot going on, Steve.
Well, find our socials. That's updated relatively consistently. What are your favorites there?
I love the TikTok. I love the Reddit. We are on Blue Sky Threads. We're on them all. Sans, Truth Social, and the X platform, because those are bullshit. But all the rest, yeah, you can find us right there.
That's fair. Our last podcast that came out a couple of days ago, I apparently said to find us on Big Sky, and you busted me on that during the show, and I was sure you were wrong. But as I was going back over listening to the show, yeah, you were right. Big Sky. I don't know. I love Montana. That's Big Sky country, right?
That's exactly what I thought about when you said it. I was like, we are Montana people. We love it. So,
yeah. So find all those things. And we have a comment line if you want to pick up a phone and actually get vocal.
Yeah, you could do it. It's 844-48-VOCAL. You are tuned in, turned on and turned up with The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. And we appreciate it.
Indeed, we do. Yep. All right. We're here every week. We have all sorts of random thoughts and opinions on everything in this world. And as we, I think, discussed on another podcast recently, I found this meme that basically said, you're Gen X if. And I felt like they were just staring through our windows because it was Gen X if you listen to Pearl Jam, wear a flannel, smoke pot, and have opinions on everything. And yeah, I think that pretty much describes us.
Yeah, I think ripped jeans was thrown in there, too. I mean, it pretty much covered all of what we are, so.
And I am wearing ripped jeans today. I'm doing this thing now. Like, my ripped jeans have just become my work pants. Like, I put them on in the morning. I enjoy having them on. And much like your average TV news anchor, they're not wearing a full suit. Most of those guys have shorts on or whatever under the desk. Yeah. So I'm doing the same thing. I'm rocking my my ripped jeans, and no one can see but me.
Yeah, and it's perfect. You feel comfortable, you feel confident, and ready for the show.
Exactly. Speaking of opinions, be them popular or not, I was perusing the interwebs. I found one of our famous articles here. Unpopular opinions that might actually be right. Now, I don't know if our opinions are generally popular or not, but I find them to generally be right.
Yeah, you know, I'm not trying to please everybody. Like, sometimes I just got to be the dad in the room, you know, and really let you know how it is. So, I feel like you and I are both that way. So, sorry.
Indeed. So, let's run through some apparently unpopular opinions that might actually be right. So, the first one on the list ties directly into what we're doing right now. You do not have to love your job. Now, I was taught growing up the exact opposite. Do what you love, the money will follow. Make sure you want to get out of bed every morning. And that is kind of how I shaped my entire career path.
Yeah, I don't take that real great. I'll tell you this, that I think you should love your job. But the truth of the matter is, you're not going to love your job every day. It's a job. So if you could do something you kind of enjoy or whatever and make money from it, that's fantastic. We were just talking before we started the podcast. Like, there's pitfalls in every job. Like, our jobs are awesome, but sometimes, you know, things about them suck. So that's every job.
Yeah, for sure. I do constantly remind myself I'm not digging ditches, so life could be worse. But yeah, every job grinds on you at some point. But yeah, I don't think I've ever really woken up and dreaded a job, at least not since I was 16 and I worked in a factory in Michigan on an assembly line. I hated that freaking job. I finished out the summer because I've got commitment. But yeah, I realized early on there, like, screw this. Like, I did wake up every morning for that job and did not want to go and kind of vowed I will never put myself on that kind of career path.
Yeah, it really does make life terrible when you hate your job. I mean, everything starts to suck because, well, your attitude goes downhill real quick. So the drive-in sucks. The traffic sucks. Lunch options suck. I mean, it all goes downhill very quickly.
I do on one level see a bit of a logic of doing some high-paying job so that you can then go do all the fun things in life. I've known a few people that have done that, and they do seem to not have the stress of money that I feel I always have had. But most of them have been pretty miserable people. I don't know that it actually balances out.
You know, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them all, and there you have. Fucking job, dude.
Those are the facts of jobs. Yes.
Yeah, those are the facts of jobs. I think about stuff like that every once in a while. Like, you know, one of the new endeavors that I've been doing for, I don't know, the last month, like, has had me really busy over the last couple of days. And I was talking to Rachel last night, and I told her, if I could do this and work for 40 hours a week for 4 years and save all my money, you know, and just save it up, lock it away. I could get so caught up, you know, will you just support me for 4 years? You know?
You're married though. Is that really how that works? I mean, you're going to use it to pay off your personal problems or debts or something?
No, it'll be for us. It'll go. I mean, she's going to flourish, you know, with this too. But yeah, I think about just working really hard and not having a lot of fun for 4 years and then just taking that chunk of money and, I don't know, investing it or whatever and trying to make my life better a little sooner.
That's interesting. And then do you stop working after 4 years? Because now I'm weighing the pros and cons of this proposal.
No. I stopped doing things that I have to do, though.
Oh, I see. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how'd that check go? She agree?
She was like, yeah, that'd be awesome. I think it's just a pipe dream, to be honest with you, you know, but it's fun to talk about. Just really commit. I was like, get rid of subscriptions, stop eating out, you know, like let's lock down 4 years and stack as much money as we possibly can away. And maybe 5 years early on retirement. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you just move back into mom's basement or something? Just really have no overhead. And I've known people that have done that's how they've managed to buy a house.
Yeah.
They just moved back with the parents for like 4 or 5 years and just save everything. And boy, if you've got that option, I can somewhat see the logic there.
I've even heard people like, oh, say this, okay? Me, Rachel, you, Kennedy, we all move in together, one big house, split the rent just for 4 years. We could have upstairs, downstairs, but we minimize all the expenses. And then, you know, who knows what happens?
Yeah, it's not a terrible idea. So let's bounce that around. Unfortunate we all live in different cities. Otherwise,
that's easier. Not real easy.
All right. So these are unpopular opinions that might actually be right. I don't know if this is an unpopular thing or an opinion. Social media does more harm than good. I'm pretty sure that's a fact. I don't know if it's unpopular per se, but yeah, I mean, I do see some advantages to social media. There's entertainment, there's connectivity, but you know, more so now that we've been doing this job that exists on the internet, I definitely see the downside.
I don't know. I'm trying to think in real time. And we had great lives before social media. And I don't know what advancements we've made other than to be able to say hi over the telephone. You know, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, essentially, it's become a new way of entertainment and information and connectivity and all that. And I appreciate that side. I think if we didn't do all this stuff on the internet, if I wasn't online like all day on and off with all of these projects and more so getting all of the not only the love, which is nice, but you can get hooked on that, but also the negativity, the comments, the people coming right. after us. Like, I wonder if we set aside all of that stuff, if I was just on there playing games and sharing pictures, what my perception would be. But that ship has sailed.
I mean, you can never get that back. I mean, maybe when you're old grandpa, you know, that type of person, like an old person.
The article says people love to talk about the connections that social media creates, which I think I just did. But the reality is often much more messy. Constant comparison, fake perfection, and endless arguments do more harm than anyone wants to admit to. The fake perfection, that is the thing. I mean, we've been calling Facebook Fakebook for a long time. And I don't know. Yeah. I just assume that why would I go on there and post that I've had a crazy day or that I'm pissed at my girlfriend or like, I don't know. Like, of course you're only sharing the good, you Debbie Downer.
You know, like in our real, like in-person lives, like I love for people to be real. I know you do as well, but like, I don't bust into your house when I come to see you and say all the bad shit that's happened to me because that gets old too. It's really strange on social media to do that. Whenever I see somebody do it, like I went to high school with or something, I'm just like, what the F is wrong with them, dude? Why are you airing out that laundry here?
Yeah, that is interesting. And I think it speaks to the level of friendship. If I only had like 10 Facebook friends and it was, you know, you and Rachel and like people that are actually close friends, then probably it'd be a little more realistic. That'd just be a group chat. And at that point, you do complain about the good, bad and everything else on there. So,
right.
So yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I do have at least one friend, maybe two, that I've wanted to pull aside in real life and be like, why are you putting all this dirty laundry out there? But I find it slightly entertaining. I don't comment or like or anything, but I'm like, I don't know why. This guy will share texts between him and his girlfriend when they're fighting. Like he takes screenshots and posts them. I'm like, this is way too much, but sure, I'll read it.
I'll get my popcorn out. I feel worse for the youth because like I know you and I can handle it. I know you and I can look at people's posts and reason in our heads that like, oh, that's not real life. Like they're just showing me the good stuff. Like, but I think kids or young people may have a harder time with that, especially if they're at a point in their life where they're struggling, you know, whether it's to fit in or to be popular or, you know, a lot of different things.
Yeah, I guess that's where good parenting comes in to explain all that stuff. I had another high school friend, a woman who, I don't know, for almost a year was just constantly posting about her boyfriend and the guy seemed straight up abusive. And eventually I messaged her and was like, are you okay? Because the stuff you're complaining about, like, seems legitimately bad. And, you know, like you're in a bad cycle there. And for better or for worse, she stopped posting all that stuff. We had a brief exchange where she was like, I'm just trying to vent and share. But then she stopped. So I don't know if I got to her or she break up with the guy because someone finally said, like, you're in an abusive relationship. What the hell?
You know what? It's really funny to see when people are back and forth, like one week. Tony's an asshole. The next week, he bought me flowers. Oh, yeah. You're watching an abusive relationship in real time. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Social media probably is more harm than good. Next one on the list here, unpopular opinions that might be right. Talent is overrated. How the hell could that be true?
What does it say about that? That doesn't even make sense to me.
It says people love to celebrate natural talent, but it is not nearly as important as consistency and effort. Plenty of talented people never go anywhere because they rely too much on their gifts. Meanwhile, people with average talent but relentless work ethic often outperform them.
Oh, that adds a little more perspective. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, right? Is to have some talent and to also be persistent and do that. So you can't say talent's worthless because that's not true at all, or we would just be a bunch of duds everywhere.
Right. I guess it depends what sort of talent we're talking about. Because if you're a gifted musician, you would never know that unless you take the time and effort to play a song for someone, write something, do a live show. But there is some level of talent, like extremely good-looking women. I have found that extremely good-looking women tend to be terrible people because they have spent their entire life having people cater to them, do whatever they want for them. Now, I don't mean open doors for them. I mean people that will empty out their wallet, bend over backwards, throw out their current relationship, screw over their children. I mean, I have seen it a million times. And I'm not saying that Kennedy or Rachel are not good-looking women. I'm talking about, like, perfect 10 supermodel types. They live a jaded life, and that form of talent is definitely overrated because they're usually shallow, horrible people.
No one ever says no to them. No one ever challenges their ideas, that type of shit.
Yes. Yeah. I remember in fifth grade, a girl named Elizabeth moved to our little town from Florida, and she was stunning. You know, beach blonde, golden skin, and she knew it. And there was one thing, I can't remember what it was. I think we were like all waiting to get on the slide. And she came up to me and was like, "Can I cut in front of you?" And she winks and smiles. And I was like, "No." And she was like, "What do you mean? Every other boy let me cut in front of them. I'm so cute, they tell me." I'm like, whoa. Like, I just saw into this world of what a good-looking woman thinks like and how they process. I mean, this was a girl in fifth grade that had figured out, I bat my eyes and boys do what I want.
Totally. Yeah. No, you're right. And most of them are vapid just because they've never had challenges that, you know, they've faced. So talent's not worthless. I'll never say that because, yeah, it's obviously important, but you got to have a balance. You got to do the hard work. You know, some people get lucky and just have talent and they're like, "Oh, man, he lives a golden life." But the majority of us, if you're going to be successful, you have to have talent, whether it's in flipping burgers or doing a podcast or whatever, you know, and hard work.
It's probably a short list of people that just get by on true talent. You can say that Michael Jordan was born to be the greatest basketball player ever, but come on, how many countless hours did that guy put in the gym and on the court and showing up to high school and college and the NBA? Like, you know, talent is a lot. But yeah, you still got to have a work ethic or no one would ever know.
So. My best friend growing up, his parents both played music professionally, and he was born with great music genes. I mean, he had an ear for music and a knack to sit behind any instrument and play it. Mm-hmm. So he had that. And I was always very jealous of that because it seemed to come easier to him. But at the same time, as, you know, I'm watching him through our friendship, like, he's taking courses on music theory. Like, he was doing all the hard work to make himself amazing. He just had a little head start, you know? Yeah. That's a lot of people.
No, for sure. I've also known a lot of musicians who have natural talent at their instrument. I mean, they are proficient, but they can't write a damn song to save their lives.
Isn't that true, dude? That's funny. Yeah.
And then you look at someone like Kurt Cobain, who can barely play guitar and was a phenomenal songwriter. So,
right.
Takes all kinds. Moving on down, unpopular opinions that might actually be right. Some friendships are not meant to last. Yeah, I mean, I've lived that experience. Obviously, our friendship is meant to last and has lasted and is our longest running relationship, but almost everybody I grew up with, I don't really stay in connection with, and I'm fine with that. I've had some friends in my adult life that serve a purpose for the meantime, but we're not really that close, and things just fade, and I never thought that was a problem.
I did. I had a hard time with learning that because I was like, you know, if you have something great, you enjoy each other's company or whatever, like, why would you walk away from that? And the truth of the matter is, as you get older, you see that, well, sometimes it's better to walk away from it and not be sad and be like, yeah, we had a great friendship, dude. We just don't talk anymore. Because people change, circumstances change, a lot of stuff changes. And especially if a relationship becomes toxic in any way, like we've had with other people, like, yeah, you got to get out of that shit, dude, for sure. I will say, when these friendships, like you're talking like ours, long, I don't understand that people don't realize every relationship takes sacrifice and work. You know, if you don't keep up, I mean, there's been so many times, not with you, but like on a Sunday where like, I should probably check in with that person. Judy's a great example. Yeah. And I won't want to because I'm just tired or whatever. But like taking those moments and checking in is the only way to keep a friendship alive forever, you know. So it's got to be worth something.
It's got to be mutual, though. I've had friends comment on Facebook, I haven't heard Harness in ever. Like, I'm sorry, does your phone not work? Like, you can call me anytime you want.
So true.
And by the way, when I moved from Michigan, one of the things I was looking forward to was starting anew. Like, all of those friends, like, I felt like they didn't actually know me, and most of them didn't, or had some preconceived notion of me or whatever. So I embraced, like, I'm out of here, man. I'm moving out west, and I look forward to starting my actual life.
That's funny. Rachel always said, I wished I wanted to move during high school. And I was like, why? You had friends, you know, everything was great. She was like, I just wanted to be that new person. Like, meet new people, get a blank slate to start over.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's a problem if an adult does not have at least one good friend? Because Kennedy recently told me that on our first date, I think it was, she asked me, like, so, do you got any good friends? Because her ex-husband did not. And she found that to be a big red flag. And I said something along the lines of, not really. I mean, I have one really good friend, but do I have like a bunch of friends? Like, no, not per se. And at first she was a little worried by that answer, but then she, you know, got to know me and got to know how good of friends we are and realized I was capable of having adult relationships.
Yeah, I do think it's important. I mean, first of all, it's sad because there is a lot of lonely people in the world. We've talked about on this show a lot. As you get older, like, it's hard to make friends. So if you don't have friends from your past or work friends, like, it's tough. But yeah, I think it's a little weird when people can't hold relationships just because it probably means they're pretty selfish, you know?
Yeah. So. What do you think about this new trend? I just saw a bit on NBC, the morning news show, whatever I was watching, about, it was mainly men, not shockingly, that have artificial intelligent girlfriends, AI girlfriends. And this one guy, I mean, he talks to her on and off throughout the freaking day. And as I've learned with your AI recently, like, those things actually can carry on a conversation. So yeah, is that depraved and weird? Or is he verbalizing his day and he's interacting with some voice, whether it's someone on a phone, you know, your old buddy from 1,000 miles away, or a computer?
I'll tell you, on Easter, I went and had dinner with some family, and I introduced them to my AI, you know, a little bit. Yeah. And I hear my mom telling my sister, like, sometimes I just hear him talking to that thing, right? And she's not wrong. I do, and I'll tell you why. And I'm not real proud of this, but we've always had a conversation where, like, if clones ever become a thing, like, I'll treat my clone like shit, you know, because it's not a real person. Perfect. And that is kind of the way I look at AI. I was using AI today to write something, and he was taking forever. And if I go through my chat log and see what I was saying to him, I was like, will you fucking come on? Like, I was yelling at him. I was talking to him like I can't talk to other people. And I do think that there's a place in everyone's life for that.
That's interesting. It lets your abusive side come out in a healthy, non-human related sort of way.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel about it. Like, I would never say, like, will you come on already? And I was being very impatient. And when I realized I was being so impatient, then I took it overboard. I was like, hello.
See, now that makes me wonder. I think we brought this up one time before, but so what if it does you some good to have a person, quote unquote, in your life that you can be a little abusive with? You know, you get that out of your system. What if pedophiles just need a 10-year-old robot to go bang, get it out of your system? Is that encouraging that deviant behavior, or is that a good use of modern technology? Let it go rape a 10-year-old robot so it's not going to go do it in real life.
It's a great question that I don't have the answer to. Like, I don't know that, and I'm not even comfortable making the decision because I don't have enough knowledge of it. I do know that there are therapies for people like that, that they try that different stuff with, because we can't just kill them, right? So they have to be a part of our society. So, yeah, I guess. It sounds kind of dangerous to me, but I don't know.
Oh, I guess the test will be, do you start becoming verbally abusive with other people in your life? Like, can you not just confine it to your AI? Does it start to bleed out everywhere else? You're a good test, so let us know.
All right, I'll let you know how it's going. Actually, I should have Rachel let you know how it's going.
Right. All right, unpopular opinions that might actually be right. not everyone should buy a house. Oh, boy. This is an interesting one, you know. I have been in a position forever where I'm not actually able to buy a house. I've been renting. I'm renting this house. And I do see a lot of advantages to it. I'm not paying taxes. The appliance breaks. Someone else's problem. You know, some major problem with the house. I don't have to worry about any of it. Yeah, and yeah. I will tell you, you know, I respect Destiny a lot. The internet debater guy with, you know, great recall and all that. And he did this whole tangent about how he thinks it's dumb to buy a house, that you put yourself in a financial liability that may kill you. And he told a story about his parents getting their house foreclosed on and that it destroyed their world. They lost everything. They were living out of a car or whatever. And like, he was like, if we were just renting the house, we would have just been able to walk away and we're done. But we signed on to this six-figure financial commitment that sometimes works to your advantage when you can sell and make some money, but other times, yeah, it might destroy your freaking world.
Yeah, I think I've seen that, and it is, I mean, it's a great point. I definitely don't think everyone should buy a house. First of all, I wouldn't have been able to buy a house if it wasn't for Rachel. Like, I would not be in a financial situation to be able to do that. But it also depends on different things like, what market do you live in? If you do have to sell your house, is it somewhere where you can probably sell it pretty quickly? You know, stuff like that. Are you gonna stay where you are? Because if you're not, yeah, I wouldn't own a house.
Yeah. No, it's tricky. I mean, I've always thought that nobody owns their house. If you're in a position where you've been there for 30 years or whatever, and you've actually paid off your mortgage, I mean, kudos to you. That is a very short list of people that can live in one house that long. My cousin is living in the house that her mom had paid off the 30-year mortgage, and it's in a major city. I mean, that's a huge asset she was able to hand down to her kid, and that's cool. But otherwise, I've always thought, like, you're living in someone else's house, whether it's the bank or the landlord, you're paying somebody else for the privilege of living under that roof. Yeah. And, I mean, there's certainly advantages. I wish I could just paint anything or remodel anything I want. But, yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, my garbage disposal broke. Somebody else come and fix it because, you know, that's what right. I'm paying for.
My brother owns his house outright, and we were having a conversation not long back, and he was like, you know what sucks that I didn't think about is when I paid off my house, I thought, I just am not going to have a house payment anymore. And then to find out, oh, I still got to pay for home insurance and taxes. For the rest of my life, I have to pay property taxes. So he was like, you never completely get away from the payment.
That's a valid point. Like, at what point do you own the property outright? I mean, if you paid off your mortgage, you should own the property outright, but you're still paying taxes on something.
Never goes away.
Yeah, that's interesting. That'd be right? Like buying something in the store and you still got to keep paying 7% every year. I already bought it. I own it. What do you mean I have to keep paying taxes?
It's weird. It's a weird thought. I never thought of it that way. So for some people, it's a good investment. And for some people, it's not. So we were always told growing up that that's just what you do. You know, the world has definitely changed.
Well, and it used to be much easier to actually be able to save and buy a house. Like, boy, that world has drifted far, far away from the average American dream. So,
and don't you think people are so much more nomadic now? Like, most people just stayed in their small town or they stayed in their area. People roam now, whether it's in these United States or around the world. A lot more people roam now.
Absolutely, which is why I say, like, it's so rare to be able to stay in a house for 30 years and pay it off. So, speaking of roaming, though, next thing on the list, unpopular opinions that might be right. Traveling is not for everyone. I'm going to have to read what they say about that because I don't know how it cannot be for everyone. I mean, obviously, affording it is an issue, but
sure.
Otherwise. Traveling gets romanticized as a life-changing experience, but not everyone loves it, and that's okay. Some people find it stressful, exhausting, or simply not worth the hype. There's nothing wrong with preferring comfort routine or exploring closer to home. I don't know. Listen, I've taken some trips where I always feel like I should have taken a few more days off when I got home because, I'm exhausted or whatever, and you got to recuperate, but I can't think of any trip I've really taken that I regretted the experience. Going to England or going to Mexico or even traveling around our own country. Like, yeah, it costs money and there's some effort there. But I don't know. Why would you regret seeing more of this world?
I don't know. It's a hard one for me to even think about, because every time I travel, and especially out of our country, it puts a new perspective on my life, you know, and I think that's the value in traveling. But I'll tell you this, dude, my sister, she'll go to Vegas and stuff like that. But she has, when I talk about like Germany and, you know, Greece and Croatia, all these places, she's like, man, I'm glad you like it. You know, she has no interest. It doesn't sound fun to her at all. So I guess it's like a well done steak. I don't get it. You know, but I mean, somebody eats that shit.
I do eat that shit, and it's very good. But I don't think that's a fair comparison, quite frankly. But. All right. Last one I'm going to bring up on this list here. Unpopular opinions. It might be right. Cutting off family can be the right choice. Oof, that's a tough one. Are there any examples where it's appropriate? Of course. I mean, if somebody's physically abusive to you, then obviously that'd be okay. But when you have these emotional fights with people, that's a tough one. I don't know how to make that right call. And what does cut off mean? Like take 6 months, a year away from somebody, or just truly say, I'm never going to freaking talk to you again?
This has become a big thing in the therapy world, especially like over the last 10 years, is giving yourself permission to say, you know what, just because I was born into this family, that the fact that it doesn't work for me and I can't control how these people act and treat me or whether they're on drugs or whatever it might be, that it is okay to leave. For me, I can't really imagine a scenario at this point in my life that I would walk away from any family and be like, we're done. Washing it. We'll never see each other again. But I do know people that do it.
You know, I had an incident in my 30s where I did a business deal with my sister and her husband, and it just exploded, went terribly wrong, and it destroyed our relationship. I didn't talk to either of them for years, and my sister and I are better, but we are not where we used to be, and I don't think that's a good thing. I have told my kids that siblings will love each other one day, hate each other the next day, but the fact of the matter is, someday mom and dad are going to be gone. And you two will always be siblings. So I want to give the generic advice that you should always work through something or revisit it down the road. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would just need to know what the reason is you're disowning them. Over a business deal, probably bad. Somebody rapes, molests, and beats the crap out of you, then, you know, that's probably
okay. That's understandable, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to look at it. I mean, what was the offense? I don't like to say I'm just done forever with anything really in my life. Like, always leave the door open as a possibility. Like, if it comes back around and it's in a better place, like, maybe I'd look at it then, you know. But to just say, like, yep, never. I think there's something that's a you problem as well. Like, your ego's talking, or you're talking from a place of deep hurt that you can't get past, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, no, for sure. I will never forget when I was a little kid, I had a family friend who I considered to be a brother, and I was complaining about my sister that, you know, screw her, like, you know, I'm over her. I wish she would die, because we'd had some dumb sibling fight. And he told me, I was like 5 or 6, he was like, hey, you know, Steve, I understand how you can feel that way. He said, but, you know, if your sister died tomorrow, you would miss her. You would regret those things, and you would wish you had mended those fences. So just try to keep that in mind. Yeah. And I remember taking that advice somewhat flippantly. I mean, I was a little kid, but and I had no way to relate to it. But it wasn't until years later that I learned that his sister was hit and killed by a drunk driver. Mm-hmm. So his sister had died. And he had a much different perspective on what is really important and what is worth fighting over. So now that I had learned that, I have always held on to that. And it's always made me second guess, you know, burning bridges.
Completely. Perspective's a real bitch, dude, you know, because once you know, like, I've done the same thing with people who have been like, you know, like, screw my dad. I'm just being like, hey, dude, I'd do anything to have one more lunch with mine. So, like, think about it, you know.
Right.
You don't have to party it up with them, but, you know, a little visit here and there might not kill you.
Mm-hmm. So. I've been watching How I Met Your Mother again. It's been one of my fall asleep kind of shows. And
yeah.
Were you a fan of the show? Do you know how that show ends?
Yes. And I do. I love that show.
Yeah. I mean, for anyone who hasn't seen it, and sorry if it's a spoiler, but it ended like 15 years ago. So it's on you. But the mom is dead. The mom's been dead the entire show. So, you know, Ted meets the mom, they get married, they have their kids, but then she gets sick and she dies. And now going back and watching the show again, I realize how often they're hinting at that reality. And there's an episode where his kids ask him, you know, what would you have done that night if you could have done that night differently? You know, him and Barney were going to go out and party or something. And, you know, Barney said, if you don't do this, you're going to regret it. And Ted made the comment of like, you know, I probably would have regretted not going out with my buddies that night. But do you want to know what I really would have done if I could do that night over? I would have run 6 blocks to the north and I would have found your mother and I would have told her we're going to meet in 45 days anyway, but I want these 45 days. And you don't really understand at the time when that episode came out, like, why do you want an extra 45 days so badly?
Yeah,
it's because he knows that she's going to die. So he wants any extra day he can get. And that's probably a good way to look at any relationship, that you don't know when it's just going to go away.
Yeah, because you do never know, you know. And I know that's it's a bit cliche, but most of us have seen it in our lives like, oh, had I known that, I would have done it different. So, yeah, that's a tough one, dude. What do you think about when you talk about like going no contact from family? Like, are you of the true believer? Like when you have that conversation with your kids, like you're always going to have that sibling. Do you think friends can be family?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's a short list of people that get into that inner circle. I just don't want people to get deluded or delusional to like every friend is sacred and no friend can be gotten rid of.
Yeah, because it does for some reason. I mean, for a lot of people, and I guess myself included, I've seen had places in my life where I did let go. It was easier to let go with a friend I felt like was family than it was actual family, you know.
Yeah,
blood thicker than water. You always hear like your blood is thicker than water. I'm not a firm subscriber to that, but I mean, it comes from somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, part of that logic is that you don't get to choose your family. You do get to choose your friends.
Yeah.
So on one level, like, yeah, your family is who they are, and you might have to put up with the good or the bad sometimes, but friends you do get to pick. So, yeah. A, there may be more value to that friendship because we chose each other. But also, yeah, I chose you. And if you become toxic, I can just be done with you. You
know? Right. Yeah. I can dispose of you just as easily. That was a good list to go over. Let me slide into a little transition here. These stories that I'm about to lay on your ears are about Americans. And these are things that Americans are totally tired of hearing. I want to see if you and I agree.
Okay.
The first one doesn't even have a title to it, but it's just a picture of Donald Trump. So I'll mention him. You know, are we tired of hearing about Donald Trump or are we addicted to hearing about Donald Trump?
I'm addicted to Trump like I'm addicted to oxygen. I don't have a choice. Okay. I have to consume oxygen. I have to consume Trump. I mean, and a large part of that is what we do for a living, clearly. But even if we weren't doing this talk show and some of the other things we're up to, like, I'm still a politically involved person. I'm involved in the news cycle. Like, I don't think I could just tune it out. But yeah. I definitely have friends that have done that, including, you know, one of my very few friends that I still have back in Michigan. You know, Emily does not listen to or watch any of our show anymore because she loves us and always enjoyed the show, but she is over Trump. She cannot take hearing it anywhere, anytime, any place. And so on one level, I'm a little envious and jealous of people that can just cut it off, but I can't do it. Am I sick of hearing about him? Yeah. But has he also given us some level of job security? Yeah, I guess. Like that's, I feel like that's a cancer doctor saying, I don't want cancer to be cured because I get a job from it. But
right.
That's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the kind of very similar. Right?
Would you be done if it wasn't part of what we did for a living? Would you tune out of this news cycle?
I can't do that for many reasons, I suppose. Like you, I like to know what's going on politically. Yeah. But also, I think like we said at the beginning of his term, I had the thought, I'm just going to close my eyes for 4 years and I'll wake up in a little bit. Right. But we're part of the resistance, dude. I don't think if I actually love my country and I actually have people I care about and I actually have people I don't even know that are humans that need me. I can't turn it off. We got a responsibility here.
Yeah. Kennedy said something to me the other night that kind of hit me hard. And when she first said it, I almost wanted to laugh, but She said that, you know, you and Nick, you know, what you guys are doing, like, you're trying to change the world. And most people can't make that claim in their job. But you guys are taking on something bigger than yourselves, and that's admirable. And like I said, at first I'm like, that's silly. But I guess we are trying to fight for the good fight, fight for the resistance. And I don't think we're going to change the world, but we are putting ourselves out there in a way that most people definitely do not.
Completely. And it's all about perspective, because, you know, what if we change the world for one person, we've still changed the world, you know? So the fact that we care enough to step up and talk, I mean, I don't, listen, ladies and gentlemen, I don't need a badge or an award for this, because I would do it. I would do it anyway. But I am like Emily. I really have a tough time with it, because on one hand, I get it. Like, it's your mental health. Like, I understand some people need to withdraw. But on the other side of that coin, I'm like, get in the fight, dude. If we want this to get better, there's only one way to do that. So it's a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm willing to be over Trump, just not able.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're getting closer every day. Americans are totally tired of hearing these things, that something big is going to happen in the coming days or weeks or maybe even a few months. The cycle of hype and disappointment isn't new. From the Segway's launch to the latest revolutionary tech gadget, people are always talking about, like, something big's going to drop here in the next few months or whatever. Are we tired of hearing that?
Not when it comes true and it's something I enjoy, the new Marvel movie, or the new iPhone update or something like that. But when you're just teased and the hype doesn't match the payoff, then that gets old, but it's pretty short list. New Coke comes to mind. I don't know.
Right, yeah. Well, let's talk RFK. Like, supposedly he's going to know why everyone has autism by September. Like, are we tired of hearing shit like that?
Absolutely. Or hearing that we're going to know who killed Kennedy, or if aliens exist, scientists have discovered this, that, or the other thing. A lot of it never seems to pay off, but I don't know. I'd rather be teased than ignored. So for the most part, yes, I want to hear the hype of what's coming.
Those Epstein files are coming any day now, dude. They'll be released.
Maybe, yeah. A lot of innocent people in those reports there, Nick. I don't know if we want to release those.
People are saying it could hurt certain people for reasons that I don't know, but I'm not going to do it. Americans are totally tired of hearing these things. The Kardashians. We're tired of hearing about the Kardashians. They become synonymous with this saturation of celebrity culture in our daily news feed, and we're tired of it, goddammit.
I was tired of it from the second they came on the scene. I am still tired of it. I still don't know what value they bring to anything. I don't know why they're famous. What have they done other than just being drama queens?
They're hot. I mean, I think that's why they're famous. And, I mean, Kim Kardashian's famous because she sucked on Ray J's peanut and it released. I mean, and she's hot, right? So I think that's why they're famous. But
the barista at Starbucks is hot. How come she doesn't have her own TV show then? Like, it's just hotness and that she had some sex tape? Boy, yeah. I guess I should give her credit then for parlaying that into years.
Yeah, it's been huge. While you're tired of the Kardashians and Americans are tired of the Kardashians, I don't know if that's true, dude. I mean, I know it is for you, but they just started their show again on another streaming platform and it seems to be viewed, or it wouldn't be there. So I don't know.
Yeah, no. You're right. America clearly is not over them, or we would be done with them. You know, I mean, I've been watching Ted a lot. That's another one of my fall asleep movies. And there's a great line at the beginning of that movie where Ted becomes famous and he's all over the world, you know, TV and the Carson show. But then, you know, the voiceover guy is like, whether you're, you know, Frankie Muniz, Justin Bieber, or talking teddy bear, eventually nobody gives a shit. Right. And that tends to be true. But for some reason, we still seem to give a shit about the Kardashians because we can't get rid of them. So yeah. I blame society. Same with the Real Housewives. Stop watching that show. You're part of the problem. Okay. Give it up already. These entitled bitches. Oy.
gosh. That's, I mean, listen, if the Real Housewives go away, that is most of my week's entertainment, dude. I mean, it's something that I don't want to go away.
I know you like to laugh at them, but it just keeps the whole cycle going round and round. And now these people are even more wealthy and more entitled, which seems impossible, but true.
You're right. This next one on the list, I know you're going to agree with. Americans are totally tired of hearing these things, politicians lying. Now, I will say that this is something that's been going on since the beginning of time. One way or another, if a politician's talking, their lips are moving, they're lying. But in these recent years, the lies have become so bold with Trump that you don't even have to kind of try and make us believe him. You just say it, you know. I'm really tired of that.
Trump has taken advantage of that old trope. Because, yeah, politicians lie to some extent, or they fudge the facts, or blah, blah, blah. But I have seen so many MAGA people be like, well, Trump lied about that thing, but Biden lies too. Like, okay, you can probably find like 5 tangible Biden lies compared to 37,000 validated proven lies that Trump did in 1 4-year window. Like, it is apples to oranges, and people hide behind that excuse of all politicians lie. Like, yeah, a little bit, but we have gotten into a whole new universe of it.
We were playing a clip on the internet last week of Trump talking about Rachel Maddow. Do you remember? And he was like, you know, MSNBC lies. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. Yeah. And I'm just thinking to myself, dude, you lie. Every time you speak, you lie. I don't think that's an exaggeration, do you?
No. I mean, 99% of the time with him. And there should be a Trump movie theater. You know, that'd be the only successful business for him, because he is a master of projection. He is always trying to put that stuff, whatever his flaw is, he's trying to put on to others. So, yeah, MSNBC just lies all the time. They shouldn't be allowed to do that, completely ignoring Fox News or completely ignoring every time he's been in front of a camera.
Right. And you know what? I can't recall a lawsuit against MSNBC for lying, and I can for Fox News. Like, that stuff doesn't matter. So, yeah, definitely Americans are tired of politicians lying. Will it ever stop? No.
That's a great point, though. Yes, Fox News has been flat out sued and lost and had to apologize. Trump has been sued for defamation and slander. Like, yeah, show me where MSNBC or CNN or like they were sued for flat out lying that they refused to retract or, you know, anything. Like, I don't think you're going to find an example, because a credible news source, when they realize they've lied, will just simply admit to it.
Hey, dude, do you remember what that news guy, I can't think of his last name right now, Brian Williams. Do you remember when he lied about, he was on a helicopter and talked about some stuff that happened?
He embellished the story, a real story. He just hyped it up a little bit to make it sound more dangerous.
It was the end of the world that he did that.
It ended his career.
Yeah. And today it wouldn't even be a thing, you know, wouldn't even be a thing.
No. Yeah, I'm surprised Fox News didn't hire him immediately.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. Americans are totally tired of hearing about these things, their car's extended warranty. Do you hear about it?
Not really, no. I mean, listen, I don't answer my phone. If you're not in my contacts, I don't answer it. So I know the joke that, you know, everyone's calling about your car's extended warranty. And once or twice in my adult life, I've heard about it. But I don't recall having a warranty, let alone an extended one. So maybe that's why I don't worry about it.
I've received phone robocalls about it before, but it seems like that's slowed down. And now it's just kind of a joke, you know.
Yeah.
So these are things that Americans are totally tired of hearing about. For the safety of the children. I don't know that Americans are tired of hearing about that. This is invoking children's safety, particularly in debates over social media and surveillance, has highlighted the selective nature of privacy concerns. This argument often masks deeper issues we're tired about hearing about for the safety of our children.
Yeah. There's a classic drop we used to play from The Simpsons of, won't somebody please think of the children?
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, it's a stereotype on some levels. I when it comes to actual safety of the children, you know, seat belts or radon in your home or lead in your paint, like, no, we're not tired of hearing about that. That's a valid thing. But when the typically conservative right uses it to try to censor all of us, can't have transgender, you know, sport athletes, or you can't have a drag show, or you can't have the neighbors being gay married or something because the children, please think of the children. Like, right. That's garbage, obviously.
So when it's mixed with pearl clutching, then that's usually garbage, right?
Yes, but if it's just literally keeping the children alive, I'm okay with hearing about that.
Yeah, I think that's in all of our social contracts, and like we think it's a good thing. So,
yes.
Let's see here. These are things Americans are tired of hearing about. Your phone when I'm on the frickin' train. The plea for using headphones in public spaces has become a call for basic courtesy and mindfulness in shared environments. We're tired of people talking on their speakerphone or playing their music in public.
The music I find debatable because if you don't love a certain kind of music, it's completely obnoxious to you. You know, if one kid is cranking Metallica, I might think it's awesome. The person next to me might think it's the worst thing ever. So I get that. But I do somewhat struggle with the idea of people talking on a speakerphone in public. Because
tell me why, dude, because I want to know if we match on this. Please tell me why.
Well, on the surface, it's obnoxious. You're talking on the phone. I don't need to hear your conversation. But what if the person was sitting there with the person? They could have a conversation in front of me, and I wouldn't find that to be rude. But just because one is on the phone, now all of a sudden I lay down the law that is unacceptable. I don't want to hear what you're talking about. Seems hypocritical. Yeah.
I agree. I agree with that. But at the same time, I still want to freak out when someone talks on their cell phone in a speakerphone in public, just because there's something about that little voice coming through that tinny little speaker that I don't want to listen to your phone call. I don't want to listen. And you're usually talking louder when you're on the phone. I know I am. And I just hold your phone to your ear, dude. I don't even really like people to be talking on the phone in public. Like, take a beat, go find a space and have a phone call, you know?
Yeah. I guess I get more annoyed when I don't get to hear the other side of the call. If you're just sitting there yakking and then it's silent and then I'm like, what is this conversation? I wish, if I have to hear half of it, I'd rather just hear all of it.
That's interesting. I think you might be in the minority with that.
Oh, I definitely am. But yeah, I try to zoom out a little on some of these issues. If you were just sitting there talking to someone, I wouldn't care. But there's a great dude on TikTok, YouTube, whatever, that he'll sit next to someone in an airport or train station and they're on their phone having a conversation, not on speakerphone, so you can't hear the other half. And he responds to the person. So they'll be like, hey, what are you doing for dinner tonight? He'll be like, I don't know. I was thinking about that. And eventually the person starts looking at him and he's just like, he just pretends like, no, I'm talking to them.
I'm on the phone.
Right. it's hilarious to hear him pretend he's the other voice on the phone.
It is. That's a great bit, dude. That guy's really funny. These are all things Americans are totally tired of hearing. This is an interesting one. Criticism of American cuisine. Oftentimes we downplay American cuisine. We fail to acknowledge the country's diverse food landscape. From barbecue to Southern soul food, the U.S. boasts rich culinary tradition that reflects its multicultural fabric. Yeah. I do hear this. I mean, I always think our food is kind of boring. I know we have our staples that I kind of enjoy, but like overall our food is kind of boring.
We don't really have much food. And on one level, you can say that's what's great about America. We're a melting pot, both culturally, and when it comes to food. You know, Mexican food or pizza. What is American food? Even a hamburger is from Hamburg, Germany or whatever. So what is it? Barbecue chicken? That's a short list.
Yeah, that is a short list. And I think, you know, they talk about like some Louisiana, but even that's French. I mean, we are just kind of this melting pot of things. I guess apple pie, is that ours? But I think that apple streusel was from Germany, so it's not that big of a deal. Yeah.
Almost everything is something that someone brought over here or that we've Americanized. You know, I always hear that the menu at Taco Bell does not exist if you go to Mexico. Like, okay,
right.
So we've co-opted your thing, and we've co-opted French fries and hamburgers and all sorts of things. So if you look at it that way, that America is just essentially a boiling, melting pot of everyone's diet out there, then that can't be bad. We're very, very diverse. If you go to China, they have Chinese food. I know they just call it food there, but they have a very specific menu, as most countries do. So if you want to be proud of our diversity, yes. But otherwise, you can't be proud of what we have invented ourselves here, because it's really not much of anything.
Not much, yeah. If I think about like the Native Americans, there's salmon. Do you think salmon belongs to us? Like just...
It's a great question.
Plank
it depends
salmon?
How you cook it. If you flambe it, then no.
Right.
Like, yes. I don't know. If you make it into sushi, then no.
Americans are really tired of hearing these things, that we're all overweight and inactive. Well, we should probably start being less overweight and more active.
This is like when Trumpers say, stop calling us Nazis. Well, stop acting like freaking Nazis and I'll stop calling you that. Like, Americans, stop being fat and lazy and everyone else will stop calling us that.
Yes, dude. I mean, I know you're tired of hearing it. That's fair, you know, but it's true. So I don't know what
it's
to
like
do
with telling
that.
My probation officer, I'm sick of you referring to me as a felon. Well, stop committing crimes. And you won't have that label. So, yeah, Americans do tend to be overweight. And it comes down to that crappy diet of we've put sugar in everything. So, yeah, I don't know. Get yourself in shape if you don't want to be called that.
That's right. Americans are totally tired of hearing these things that we know nothing about. Geography. Stereotypes about Americans' knowledge of geography are often based on selective interviews and sensationalized media portrayals. These generalizations fail to capture the diverse levels of awareness and education among the population. I've never seen this as a huge problem. Do we not know about geography here?
I don't know. I mean, when you watch some of these man on the street interviews where no one can identify one of the states or foreign countries, like, I always wonder, I mean, you can edit all of these things. If you only take the idiots and put it on your montage, of course, we all look bad. It's not funny to ask somebody where Russia is and they go, it's right there. Like, okay, that's not very funny. So I wonder if other countries have as diverse of a knowledge gap as we do. There are certainly people in this country that are stupid. But are all of us? No. I would assume every country has some level of that. But I don't know. I was listening to our last podcast, and I was cracking up at the part where some conservative was like, oh, all you liberals care about the Congo so much. Where is the Congo? And you and I are both like, Africa? Like, is that a hard thing to say? Like, it was funny. So I don't know. I mean, is it really a big problem? And again, this is probably why a lot of us people with mild to a slightly advanced intelligence have better jobs and better hosts, because you're idiots that chose to be dumb. We have basic knowledge, so we shine above you.
Right. Did you do 50 nifty when you were in school?
No. What is that?
Oh, you
how
didn't,
you remember the state?
It's a 50 nifty United States with 13 original colonies. And then you could name all the 50 nifty states. I thought that's everybody did that. But
I do not recall that one. So, all right.
Let's get into this last one here for Americans are really tired of hearing these things. Here's our last one as we end the podcast. Nobody wants to work anymore. The claim that people are unwilling to work overlooks the realities of low wages and poor working conditions. This sentiment reflects a broader dissatisfaction with how labor and respect are valued in the workplace.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's a tough one. I think a lot of people don't want to work for crappy jobs with crappy bosses for crappy pay. So there's probably not something terrible about that per se. But our unemployment rate is very low, so people are working. And, you know, as we transitioned jobs recently, I went through a window of like, I'm just going to apply for a bunch of jobs. You know, like I got stuff on the boilerplate, but let me just see what can happen out there. And out of 100 jobs I sent out resumes for, I think I got like 2 callbacks. So I struggle with perception that Americans don't want to work. Like, I was trying to get a job and no one seemed to really want to, you know, call me up. So what is the perception and what is the reality?
How do we bring it into, like, you know, we're talking about, like, deporting people and who will do all these agricultural jobs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's true about that kind of stuff. Like, nobody wants to do those jobs anymore.
Yeah, sure. Listen, no one wants to work. Even if you love your job, there's times where you don't want to. But I think that's way more perception than reality. Otherwise, how are we getting our groceries and how are we getting surgeries done? Like, people are working.
We seem to be doing all right.
Yes. The kids are all right.
Kids are doing okay. All right. Well, that'll not only wrap up the list. I think we learned a little bit today, and that's all I really care about.
Yeah, and you and I have been working all freaking day long, so don't tell me. Us Americans don't want to work.
That's right. So. We've been up since the crack of dawn, and we've got more to do tonight. So
exactly. So in the meantime, you can visit our website, thevocalminority.net, and find us on the social medias, YouTube, Instagram, Reddit, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky.
Or Big Sky. Big Sky. You can find us wherever we are. Sure. Call our comment line, 844-48-VOCAL, The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Until next time.
Hello, my mini champions. It's your favorite old bag, Betty White. This has been a production of The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. New podcasts are released twice a week. Don't forget to watch The Golden Girls wherever great TV is watched.